God never created anything outside of himself. God never created what you and I have termed the carnal mind. Divine mind could not create anything unlike itself. Divine mind could not create anything it did not know or contain. The science of mathematics could not include a knowledge of twice two equals five. And not including a knowledge of it, it could not create it or recognize it. Therefore, anything that God did not create or does not recognize does not exist. If the carnal mind does not exist, then that which seems to result from this mind does not exist. If matter and the material universe are the products of something that does not exist, then whence comes matter and the material universe? They do not come, is the inevitable answer. And if they never came, where are they? Nowhere. What then is material existence with all its sin, its sickness, its poverty, and its woe? It is just an expression of that which you and I experience in a dream. It is unconsciousness. You and I dream only when we are in a state of sleep or in a soporific state. The dream we have in sleep is the same existence we experience when mortal mind says we are unconscious. And the dream of material existence is no different from the sleeping dream or the experience of unconsciousness. We speak of the experience of unconsciousness as a condition resulting when the mortal mind is completely silenced. That condition itself is just as much of a dream of the conscious experience in a sleeping dream, or the experience you and I have when awake. They are all the same. They are all manifestations of unconsciousness. The sleeping dream, the waking dream, and the belief in unconsciousness are all the same. One is just as real as the other, and one is just as unreal as the other. There is no difference. They all come under the one head of animal magnetism, hypnotism, or mesmerism. And all are conditions of unconsciousness because they do not involve the operation of mind or of mortal mind. There is but one mind. There is no mortal mind. Therefore, anything that claims to result from mortal mind, which does not exist, is not. And it is therefore a state of unconsciousness. So our problem is not to deal with matter or mortal mind, but to become conscious of the facts of existence, to come out from our state of unconsciousness into the consciousness of truth. We are concerned then only with truth and not with error. And when we can begin to see that matter, with all of its arguments of sin, poverty, sickness, etc., exists only as a state of unconsciousness, we can begin to cease to struggle in our mental work with a sense of opposition of mortal mind or material conditions. If error of every name or nature is simply a statement of nothing, then we cease to feel that we have to struggle with nothing, and begin to put in place of that which may be called nothing, the realities of the divine, While, as commonly affirmed, our work in Christian Science is one of substitution, in its last analysis, there is nothing for which to substitute the truth. When we begin to accept into and entertain in consciousness truth or God, are we not then doing all that is necessary to accomplish what might be called a healing? When we begin to admit truth into consciousness and express truth in our daily thinking and living, are we not then awakening from what we have called our state of unconsciousness? Is there any other process of awakening? Could there be any other process? If God is the only mind, is there anything else for us to do to become conscious of the facts of mind than to think God ideas? We have nothing to replace. We have no mortal mind to get rid of. We have no material conditions to overcome. Much of the labor and delay in our metaphysical work, I am sure, comes from this sense of process in our work. We feel that there is much of mortal mind to get out of consciousness before we can begin the demonstration of the divine. We are inclined to feel that there is much of mortality to unlearn, much purifying to undergo before we can demonstrate truth. Not so. We should not be so concerned with the matter of error. We should not be so concerned with the matter of the carnal mind, sin, sickness, lack, and the like. They do not exist. We do not have to overcome them. They do not exist. It is our state of unconsciousness that argues for the existence of these conditions. Therefore, a condition of sickness, a condition of poverty, lack, limitation, inharmony, or whatever name, does not exist as a condition of mortal mind. It doesn't exist in reality. These conditions express a state of unconsciousness, or the absence of mind. When we begin to admit into conscious thought divine ideas, we are, consequently, awakening from our state of unconsciousness, or rather, we are becoming truly conscious. And as there is but one mind, and that mind is God, we are beginning to be consciously aware of our own true existence. That existence we have always had, and which we still have, and always will have. So, birth, growth, maturity, death are not real conditions, but no conditions at all. Harmony is our normal state of existence. Health might be said to be included in harmony. Happiness, abundance, are normal and eternal states of existence at which we arrive in the proportion that we become consciously allied to God in thought. So we must learn to work, not from the standpoint of combat, but from the standpoint of perfection, man's eternal and ever-present perfection. Our constant expression of right idea in consciousness is our conscious existence and our only existence. And it must be clear to us that in the proportion that we are consciously expressing God in thought, we are not overcoming sin. We are coming into the consciousness of the omnipotence of God and the nothingness of sin. And if God is omnipotent, There is no opposite. Our constant declarations of truth, the constant affirmation of our sonship with God, our constant consciousness of good only, is our existence. And it is the only existence there is. And this existence does not include sin or sickness or poverty or the like. And consciousness, this conscious sense of existence, does not include the necessity of combating and working against that which does not exist. I am afraid that our work becomes complicated and devoid of fruitage because we may become so involved with error in our thinking. We are wondering, figuring how we can handle this error and that error. Our consciousness of good handles error. We do not have to handle error. If you and I had to handle error, it would be too bad for all of us. Our work is to know God, to think God, to live God. And that is true consciousness. And true consciousness is the only consciousness there is. And there being but one mind and one consciousness as a result of that mind, we do not have to struggle to overcome that which has no mind to originate it. Let us get this understanding of true consciousness. Let us get the calm, unlabored, assured, peaceful sense of our work in Christian Science. Do not sit down to your daily lessons and your daily work with science in a sense of burden, a sense of duty, or a sense of struggle or combativeness. Be calm, collected, secure, buoyant, and confident. There is nothing to do but to know God. There is no enemy. There is no mortal mind. There is nothing to struggle or work against. There is no opposition to our work. There is no opposition, organized or unorganized, against the church, the cause, the practice, or the growth and prosperity of Christian Science. We have not to struggle. The consciousness of truth is our work. Our daily work should be to so come into the understanding of the ever-presence of the true consciousness that any opposite sense does not suggest itself as a possibility. Our periods of work in Christian Science, our periods of prayer, should be welcome periods, not periods of duty or strife. They should be periods of rest, calm, exalted rest. Communion with God cannot be deprived of its fruitage, but the fruitage should not be our goal. God brings the fruitage, and our duty is simply to get God into consciousness. Our periods of prayer and thoughtful consecration should not be hurried or crowded by the duties and affairs of the world. Our periods of prayer and consecration should be occasions to look forward to with anticipation and joy. Nothing should be so dear to us as the time spent in thoughtful contemplation of God. And surely nothing will bring as much joy and peace and comfort.